Welcome to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus.
We're celebrating Passover on the 30th of March. I hope you all will join us. It's in Merrickville Town Hall on the 30th. Come and see the website or take a flyer today. What's a covenant? I think that's a great, great topic. Today we're talking about the Abrahamic covenant. Next week we'll talk about the new covenant. And so, for my own personal sense of importance, there are verses in the Bible that really stand out. And today we're going to be tackling one of them, because they really nail down what it's all about for me, where everything connects back into. And the study of the covenant is that. And so, what is a covenant? I think that's where we should start. Well, the Hebrew word is brit, as in brit ha-chadashah, the new covenant, or, well, the word brit means covenant. And what it means is that it's a bond or an agreement, a binding agreement, that is made between either God and man, or between two men, or two women. And so we can see some of them, for instance, that are made between leaders, like Abraham and Abimelech in Genesis 21, between King David, when he makes one, in 2 Samuel chapter 5. And so they are just agreements, and they are binding agreements where there's often a ritual and a condition. If you do this, then I will do this. And so sometimes it's a war agreement. A peace signing would be a covenant. So when Germany signed the peace treaty at the end of the war, it was a covenant, because they agreed to stick to the agreements that were made by an international panel saying, you are allowed to do this and otherwise we'll come and get you. So some covenants are like that. They have that sense of, if you do this, then I will do that. Now when God does that, he's sovereign and he can do whatever he likes. But when he agrees to something, he usually commits himself for everlasting, and he will see it out to the end. So, for instance, with the Mosaic covenant, he said, if you do these things, then I will. And so it's a conditional covenant, a conditional agreement, depending on if you do it. This covenant, though, that we're going to be looking at tonight, the Abrahamic covenant, is not like that. It is a binding agreement, but not with the sense of, if you do this. It's not a conditional covenant, but an unconditional covenant. God just commits himself because he wants to. And there is no responsibility on Abraham's side. There's only a blessing on his side. And so God just says, I'm going to bless you because I can. And because I'm God. Because I am. It's probably what I should have said, isn't it? Rather than I can. So let's look at the passages that we have here. Now there's quite a few. And we won't read through all of them because there are too many. But I do want to look at the first one, Genesis 12, verses 1 to 3, Genesis 12, 7, Genesis 22, verses 15 to 18. So there are six passages. We won't read through all of them because that's too much time, but we do want to look at some of them. So the shorter ones we'll read, the large ones I'll summarize. Now the shorter ones are Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 to 3, the same chapter, verse 7, in the next chapter, Genesis 13, verses 14 to 17. Then we have chapters 15, chapter 17, and Genesis 22, verses 15 to 18. Those are the passages, if you really want to make a study of this, to understand what God is committing himself to Abraham, that's the passages to read. It sounds like a lot, but you could actually read it in about 15 minutes, that flat. So it's not hard to read. The emphasis in Genesis 15 is threefold. Abraham would be the father of a particular nation. He would be the father of many nations, but one in particular. Now, he's the father of the Arab nations, and he's the father of the Jewish nation in particular. Yeah. Okay? He would be the father of many nations in general. They're the Arabs. And God would sign and seal the Abrahamic covenant, and he spells the exact borders of the land, which contains from the river of Egypt in the south to the great river, the river Euphrates in the north. Now, the signing was done in such a way that it was rendered as an unconditional covenant. Let's quickly look at it, because I do think there's a few verses that may be helpful then. Chapter 15. Abraham is afraid that he's going to be childless, and that his heir will be Eliezer of Damascus. God then comes to him, verse 4, and says, no, this man will not be your heir, but he'll come from your own body, from your own loins. He says, look towards the heaven if you can count the stars. And if you're able to count them, so shall your descendants be. It's like the sand reference that we had earlier. Now we have the star reference. It's the same. I mean, it's uncountable. That's really what he's saying. Then God says, verse 9, bring me a 3-year-old heifer, a 3-year-old female goat, a 3-year-old ram, and a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. So he brought them all, and he cut them in two, and laid each half opposite the other, but he did not cut the birds. The birds of prey came down upon the carcasses, and Abram drove them away. Now when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell on Abram, and behold, terror and great darkness fell upon him. And God said to Abram, know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in the land that is not theirs. They will be enslaved and oppressed for 400 years. But I will also judge that nation whom they will serve, and afterwards they will come out with many possessions. Verse 18. On that day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your descendants I will give the land, from the river of Egypt as far as to the great river Euphrates. He's asked to cut the animals in two. God passes through them and not Abraham. What it means is that God binds himself to this agreement and not Abraham. Abraham is just a beneficiary. He's the one who is receiving the blessings, but he doesn't actually have to stick to the agreement. Now, that sounds a bit funny. Normally, when you have a binding agreement between the two of us, you and I would both have obligations. In this case, God obligates himself as the only one, and Abraham is the only one who is the beneficiary. Genesis 22, verses 15 to 18. God and Abraham are involved in this covenant. Now, in the previous covenants that we have in Scripture, we have Adam and we have Noah. They both have a covenant with God. Adam stands as the representative of all humanity. So does Noah, because from him, all of humanity come. But that's not the case with Abraham. From Abraham, there are only Semites that come, two nations, Israel and the Arabs. And so he's saying, you are standing here as the representative of them. But he actually specifies it even further. He says, out of that seed that is promised. In the last passage that we see, it's the seed that is connected there, because you have not withheld your son, your only son. Now that's the Akedah, the binding, a passage that we're all familiar with. Abraham is about to sacrifice his son, and God says, no, that's not what I want. I want him to live because my agreement, my covenant is with him. And it continues from there. And so Abraham stands here as the representative head of the Jewish nation. That's quite a bit of text here. So who are the beneficiaries?
Abraham and his seed.
Abraham and his seed. Who else?
Ishmaelites too.
Ishmaelites? Yeah. What about his wife? Do you think she'll get something?
Yeah, why not?
Throw her in too, because let's be honest, Sarah does play a role in all of this. Now, while she's not mentioned very clearly in the text, she is always there.
Sorry, with this covenant, with this description here, Abraham has played his part in the bargain, because he said, because he's obeyed my voice. So that was a two-way. Was there some sort of a two-way arrangement going on here?
Yes or no. He already had those promises before this, and most of them are already in place before this. But God tests them here, and so God then confirms it. It's more a confirmation that we see here rather than an agreement on that. If Abraham had not done it, God had already obligated himself on most of the passages, on most of the, for instance, the land and some of the other things. And so
for Abraham...
If Abraham had been disobedient,
then
God would have still been obligated, because he had already obligated himself. And so God tests his faith, and Abraham says, that's okay, I'm with you all the way.
But God knew that Abraham
would pass. Nevertheless, for Abraham that's a real test, because Abraham doesn't know what's going to happen. And that's the same for us. God knows what we're going to do tomorrow, but you and I don't. So we still have to work through that. What does God want us to do tomorrow? And so we still struggle with our day-to-day lives, as we ought to. So within this passage, what we have is there are blessings to Abraham and Sarah. They would be the parents, or particularly Abraham, would be the father of a great nation. That's the nation of Israel. They would possess all of the promised land. Other nations, including the Arab nations, would come from Abraham. And many of his descendants would be kings, both Jewish and non-Jewish. And we can see that later on in the line of Ishmael, when it's later on explained in Genesis. In the book of Samuel, we see some of the Jewish kings coming up, and kings and chronicles. Abraham was to be a blessing to others, And I think that the clearest passage that we have in that is that classic argument with God, where he says to God, I know that you're going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, but if there are 10 righteous, will you not spare the city? He has that whole bargaining thing with God. And we can immediately see there's a blessing there for him. But he also blesses other people, obviously, within that. Now, his name has become great. If you mention his name in amongst the Jewish people, they know who he is. They may not know all the details, but we know who he is. If we look at the church, do they know who he is? Well, yeah. They don't know all the details, but they know who he is. And he's even great amongst the Muslims. And so you have one character who's actually known from China all the way to... He's probably the greatest name that is there. His seed, the nation of Israel, would become great. Well, we would become innumerable, but I don't think we've actually got that number, actually. What is that number when you can no longer count?
Infinite.
But have you ever tried to count to that number? Have you ever tried to count to a million? At the moment, there's about, 14 million Jews? Have you ever tried to count to that number?
No.
No. I mean, and that's the point that God is making. From Abraham, innumerable people would come. It also talks about his seed in the singular. And so while we have it in the plural, we also have it in the singular. Now, in the singular, we look at the Messiah who would come from him. And the Messiah will be emphasized in the next talk, and so I won't talk that much about that today. Now, Ishmael would be blessed too. While he's the son of a bondwoman, God said in Genesis 21:13 that I will make him a nation as well, because he is your seed. Now, some people think that's a bit harsh, that he would only become a nation, but from him would come kings and rulers. And there is actually another blessing that is within this. In Isaiah 19:25, it is a verse well looking up for. You see, we often look at all the blessings and we say, they're for the Jewish people only. But is he just the God of Israel? No. He's the God of all the earth. So Isaiah 19:25, starting verse 23. While other Arab nations also come from Abraham, they don't have specific promises that we can pinpoint as clearly as this, in such a marvelous blessing. But here we have two nations that really stand out, Assyria and Egypt. Blessed be Egypt, my people. Well, I don't think there's any other verse in Scripture that says, blessed be Egypt. Normally we'd go, remember those Egyptians? Remember how they kicked us out of Egypt?
And the Assyrians.
The Assyrians. Don't even get started on that. In that day. Some people see that as a future time still to come.
Yes, right.
And I subscribe to that. And so I think there will be an enormous blessing for both Egypt and Assyria that we cannot see today.
Well, if modern day Syria is Assyrian?
No, Assyria is a little bit higher than that. So it is Iran, Iraq, and the North Syria. That's the area we're talking
all
about.
Right. All right.
So while those boundaries at various times was a little bit fluid, depending on who was the king, because they all had that kind of, I want to be bigger than you. They fought with Egypt, and then they fought with Israel, and then they fought with Judah, and then they fought with Aram. And so they keep fighting with each other and around. So at various times, those borders change. But if you look at the map that we have today, around the area of Iraq, Iran, and northern Syria, that's the area that you're really looking at. All that to say that Ishmael would be greatly blessed too. What about the Gentiles who are not included in this? Would they be blessed?
Yes, they are.
How do you know that? Out of these passages that we've read, the Genesis passage, come back with me to Genesis 12. As I said before, this is my favorite verse in the Bible. It's the one that I really think we ought to proclaim loudly. And I will bless those who bless you and curse you that curse you. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. All of the families. There's not a single family that will not be blessed through this. And that's an amazing verse. Some of them are specifically mentioned. They'll be blessed. That's great. We looked at some of them. But all of the families will get a blessing. I don't know about you, but that's something I want to proclaim. And I think this section of the covenant, Genesis 12, 1, 2, 3, is the central, pivotal point of Scripture. If I would hang something up, that's where I would always start. Looking at all those passages that we read, there are a number of things that we can learn from it. A great nation would come out of Abraham. That nation was Israel. With a promised land, the land of Canaan, as it is called here. We today call it the land of Israel. Abraham himself would be blessed. And he was blessed by having a son, but also a relationship with God that, well, there's very few like him. His name would be great, and we discussed that. Abraham would be a blessing. And then in verses the three that we read, those who bless him would be blessed. Those who curse him would be cursed. And because this covenant is also confirmed, and we'll look at that in a minute, to his son Isaac and then to Jacob, we would actually state those who bless Israel will be blessed, those who curse Israel will be cursed, based on this verse. Abraham will be an ultimate blessing, and Abraham would receive a son through his wife Sarah, not through the bondwoman. His descendants would go into Egyptian bondage. Boo.
Yes.
But we did. But we would come out. And his name was changed from Abram to
Abraham.
Abram means?
Father.
Exalted father. Abram. Ram means on high. Af means father. The father on high, or the exalted father. And Abraham means?
Father of all nations. Or the exalted father of all nations.
Of a multitude. That's right. Yeah. And Sarai, her name would be changed to Sarah. And Sarai means, Sarah means prince. Sarai means my princess. And Sarah means the princess. So both of them had a great blessing already in just the name change. And there was a token of the covenant. What's the token? When it was done to me, I didn't walk for a year. What can you do? Now, circumcision is not an unusual thing. Back then in the Middle East, they did it both on birth and when a boy reached puberty. But in Jewish custom, according to this covenant, it is done on the eighth day. So if you want to be a part of this covenant, you have to circumcise your children as a sign of this, saying, yes, we commit ourselves to God in this sense. And so circumcision in itself is not unique, but it is a sign of our Jewishness. There are other signs of other covenants. For instance, the rainbow is the sign of the Noahic covenant, the covenant that God made with Noah. I think this covenant, the Abrahamic covenant, is the basis for another covenant. Do you know which covenant that would be? The new covenant and the Davidic covenant. Now, the Davidic covenant really spells out the son and the kingship, and the new covenant spells out the blessing aspect. Now, we'll talk about that next week, so we don't want to dwell there. But this covenant is therefore like a super covenant, an overarching structure. So by understanding this one, you can understand the next two. If we remove this one, as some people have tried to do, you end up with a new covenant or a Davidic covenant that is worthless because it doesn't have that foundation anymore. By taking this away, you have no foundation. So some people try to reduce the Abrahamic covenant to just a blessing and say, oh, that's all it really meant. It was just about the seed. It was about Yeshua, and therefore it stops. But if we do that, then we rip out the foundation and say it's really just a single man's covenant and nothing more. And that's not what it is. Now, some people have argued that since Abraham had more than one child, how do we know that it was to Isaac and not to Ishmael? And that's an important thing to remember. So, on the other side of the paper that I wrote, we see the confirmation through Isaac. Let's look up that passage in Genesis 26. And so, God comes to his son, but only one of the sons. The other one was promised a land, and he got that away from the promised land. He would be, from him would come kings, and we can see that. But the covenant is not established through him. It is established through Isaac. God says to him, don't go down to Egypt. Your father has been there. Your children will go there, but you don't go down. Stay in the land. Then he says the oath, which is the covenant, and that he would then multiply the seed as the stars of heaven. And we saw that it's the same as the Abrahamic covenant. And all the earth would be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. God still wants something from it. Even though he has promised unconditional things, he still wants something from us. What is it that he wants from us?
Obedience.
Exactly right. You see, ultimately, whatever God wants from us, that's what we got to do. He calls us, he calls you, and he calls me into obedience. Most of the time he calls us to do the same kind of things, but sometimes he calls us to do specific things, and it's for us to be obedient. Let's look at verse 24. God commits himself because of Abraham. Well, even from Isaac we have two nations. Who are the two nations?
Esau and Jacob.
Very good. So, would it come through Esau then?
No.
Why not?
Because he's not the chosen one. It says in the prophets, Jacob I love, but Esau I hated.
That's right. Because Esau was disobedient. So let's look at that and see the confirmation. Confirmation to Jacob, which is in Genesis 28, verses 13 to 15. This is when he has... We probably should start in verse 10, because that'll help us a bit with the background. Here we see the confirmation to the next generation, to Jacob. And I love this verse, because now we can see clearly that it's narrowing down. It goes from Abraham to Isaac, and he could have had two, from Isaac to Jacob, and he could have picked another one, but he didn't. And from Jacob, we have the 12 sons and the 12 tribes. And so by now, we are clearly into Jewish territory. And so there can be no more confusion. But just for argument, we could actually read Genesis 49. And I've noted that in your handouts, so you can read that yourselves. But we will look at Psalm 105, because I think that says it very nicely. So really, the covenant shouldn't be called the Abrahamic covenant. It should be called the covenant of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But that's so long. So Psalm 105, verses 6 to 11. He commanded it to 1,000 generations. How many generations is that? It's like saying eternity. It's forever. That's really what he's saying. 1,000 generations. I mean, technically, you could probably try to figure out how long that is, but...
Very long.
That's a very long time. And so he's saying, forever, this is the covenant that I made with you. It's a covenant I made with Abraham, the oath to Isaac, confirmed to Jacob, a statute as an everlasting covenant. The land is to you. We see the same thing mentioned in 1 Chronicles chapter 16, verses 14 to 17. That's on your handouts. He is the Lord our God. His judgments are on all the earth. Remember his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to 1,000 generations, the covenant which he made with Abraham and his oath to Isaac. And he confirmed it unto Jacob for a statute, to Israel for an everlasting covenant.
Why does Israel have to defend its borders?
I think the blessing that is going to come is the blessing of shalom, the blessing of peace. Now that hasn't happened yet. And so when Messiah will come, peace will be established. At that point, we don't need to defend the borders anymore, because the Lord will reign from Jerusalem. At this point, well, I think Israel, like any other nation, needs to defend its borders. But I personally believe that there is enough space in the land to share the land. We are called to live with the aliens, with the strangers, and to treat them well. And so I do think that we need to do that as well.
I'm just thinking of Samuel talking to some of the kings or something, telling his king to go and plunder, brought back some goats and sheep or whatever. And the king decided what he wanted to do.
Yeah, so that's the story of Saul. Samuel comes to Saul and says, go and wipe out the Amalekites. And the Amalekites had been, since Genesis, they'd been a pest to God.
Yes.
He says, I'm going to send you into Egypt as a Jewish people, because the sin of the Amalekites hasn't reached my nostril yet. That's how the old version reads. Their sin became worse and worse. And so when God pulls Jewish people back in the land, he says, wipe them out. Now, there were many Canaanites in the land, but he didn't say to all of them, wipe them out. He only targeted very specific groups whose sin, and we don't know exactly what that sin was, but most likely the sin was child sacrifice, because that was very common, and God very clearly spoke on that on a number of occasions. Whatever you do, don't do that. Now, they finally had a final battle, and that's with King Saul. King Saul has the opportunity then to once and all finish it off. And he saves one, King Agag, and he lets him, and he says, well, I kept the best of the sheep and the goats and this king. And Samuel comes to him and says, look, because you've done this, the kingdom has been torn away from you. And Saul gets punished severely for that. And yet he lets the king live, because that same king has a descendant whom we later on read in the book of Esther, Haman. Haman is an Agagite. He comes from Agag. It's the same person. And so if Saul had done his duty, then the problem wouldn't have been there with Esther. And so sometimes God can see things that we don't understand, but because we are disobedient, we don't pick that up. Now, later on in Esther, we see another person from the same line as King Saul. And Saul was the son of Kish. And another son of Kish was Mordechai. Mordechai comes from that same line, not directly from the king, but from one of the brothers. And he is able then to stop that threat. And so the 10 sons of Haman and Haman himself are killed. And that's the end of that threat. That's the background to your question, right? So what is the question?
I was really just trying to get at why Israel still needs to be out there defending its borders.
Mm-hmm.
You're almost going against God. But, God's saying it's yours. I mean, if it's yours, why do you need to defend it? You're almost testing God. You're saying, God, is it ours, or do we need to defend it?
When they came back out of the Exodus, Joshua leads them in the land. While the land was promised to them, the land also had thorns and thistles which needed to be cleared. it also had thorns and thistles in terms of humanity,
yes.
People that needed to be removed
yes.
from the land.
Yes.
It's a little bit like that. While the land has been promised, the fulfillment hasn't happened yet. So the Abrahamic covenant in terms of its fullness hasn't happened. That's still to be awaiting in the future. And I suspect that that won't happen until the Messiah, the King, will come. But it is a bit of a double-edged sword. We do want to give them freedom within the land because they have rights to the land. In the land. In terms of rights to the land, that has been set by God. It's a tough one.
If all the Arab nations were to study the Bible like we do, then we don't need any borders.
But I think that will be solved one day. Unfortunately, not today. Anyway, let me give you some closing thoughts because this actually addresses a little bit of this issue. The Abrahamic covenant was signed and sealed at a specific point in time. Abraham got a blessing immediately. He got a son, an heir, which he didn't have until then. But not everything went straight away into effect. He had to buy a plot to bury his wife. He never really owned anything but a burial plot, the Cave of Machpelah, and that's it. A little space in around the Hebron area, and that's it. So some of them went into effect immediately, like a name change, circumcision, the blessing, but some things would be awaiting fulfillment, like the birth of Isaac took 25 years before it would come. It would take 400 years before the Jewish people would actually come into the land in terms of an inheritance with Joshua. Well, the fullness of it is still yet awaiting some future stage when Messiah will come and share with us. Until that day, it is our duty to call out his name and say, come and worship Messiah because he is coming again and he's coming soon. This covenant is also the base of the new covenant, and I'll talk about that next time. And the passages for that are Jeremiah 31, verses 31 to 34, and Ephesians chapter 2, verses 11 to 16. Now, we won't look them up today, but they're your homework. So, for next week, there are things to read.
You've been listening to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus in Australia. For more information, contact us at Jews for Jesus, Post Office Box 925, Sydney, Australia, 2001. God bless you.